Previously on Talking Trash.
And I have banned David Carradine films in this house. I have banned them. Okay. Only our bad movie night group understands this situation.
Now it's garbage.
Another movie night.
Like that?
Yeah, I do not want David Carradine in this house. No Carradine movies in this house. Oh my God, Jesus.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. We are Just Another Movie Night. I am Scott.
And I'm Joe.
And today we are talking trash. Talking trash indeed. This is our show to review, spoil, debate, crap on, and give second chances to the hated, the lowest rated, and the much debated films on the internet. All while asking the question, is this the worst movie ever made? And if not, what is? Because here on the show, we believe you can't truly review films unless you know what the worst are. And today, we're in TNA month. TNA.
Tits and ass. It sounds like talking trash.
Talking trash. Tits and ass. Yeah. Goes hand in hand. Well, here we are. And this week, I decided to. We watched something drunk once, and I wanted to rewatch it on the podcast. So this is actually our second viewing of Evil Toons. Evil Toons. From. What year do you think this is, by the way?
Okay, well, I think it was from the 80s.
You thought the 80s, which...
Yeah, but can I tell you why I thought the 80s?
Go ahead.
Well, number one, the wardrobe. Number two, the long asses. Number three, the actors all look like they were in their 40s when they're supposed to be in their 20s. And number four, the big hair.
Big hair. That'll do it every time, is the big hair.
Every time.
Yeah. This is actually 1992.
Yikes.
1992, this is a straight-to-video horror movie spoof directed by Fred Olin Ray, who is the director of such films as... Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Bikini Drive-In, Bikini Airways, Bikini Cave Girl, Bikini Chain Gang, Bikini A-Go-Go, Bikini Roundup, Bikini Pirates, Bikini Royale, Bikini Royale 2, Bikini Frankenstein, Bikini Warrior, Bikini Time Machine, Bikini Jones and the Temple of Uros, Bikini Hoedown, The Girl from B-I-K-I-N-I, The Bikini Escort Company, and Genie in a String Bikini.
Oh my God. Okay, that's the best title of all time.
He also did a movie while I was looking at these movies that he has directed. He also did a movie that I thought I dreamt up as a kid. I wasn't sure if this movie was real because I had no idea what the title was. And I was wondering, should we watch this weird movie next week?
The soldiers on this transport mission are about to have an experience beyond their imagination. When they come across an uncharted island.
Please, God, let it be Club Med.
Inhabited by exotic women.
Check out the Hooters on those bays.
For these men, it's a dream come true. Until it turns into a nightmare. Five men thrown back to the Stone Age, caught between 100 women and 1,000 dinosaurs. Dinosaur Island.
Okay.
Okay. Then we'll just put it on next week and we'll just talk about it then.
Yeah.
All right, so the budget of this movie was $140,000.
What? What?
Yeah, mostly because it turns out animation is expensive. And that's why the movie called Evil Toons only has a cartoon character in it for only 90 seconds.
Oh my god. Okay, first of all, this movie's called Evil Toons. Mm-hmm. Plural.
Plural.
There's one toon.
Yes.
And he's only like on screen for 14 seconds. What?
90 seconds of screen
time. No. Oh my god. I have to go back and count. There's not 90 seconds.
That's what I saw. And already did it for us online, apparently.
Oh my
now,
god.
Ray, the director, said, even Roger Corman turned us down. He said it was too risky, so we did it ourselves.
Yeah, well, it seems like Mr. Ray is like a smut peddler.
He has as many credits as Roger Corman.
Well, I mean, he probably makes, 950 movies, which it's the same actors, probably. And
a lot of TNA.
Yeah, just tits and ass. Like, there's no plot or budget needed.
I would say half of the credits seem like softcore porn, which all those titles I read were. I didn't read all the crazy good ones. Because if I named some of the other ones, you would have been like, yep, we're watching that soon.
Oh my, okay, first of all, the bikini movies, put on the list, because I want to, especially Genie, Bikini, whatever.
The Genie, Bikini, what was it, what was it called?
The Genie in the Bikini? What? What was it?
Genie in a String Bikini.
Oh my god, okay, I need to watch that. But like, honestly, he's just a TNA hustler. That's all.
I mean, yeah, I guess so.
I mean, do you think his movies have any freaking meaning? At least Roger Corman made some really decent movies.
Well, hey, fun fact, a lot of these movies were Roger Corman. That's why he went to him. He worked with him a lot. So.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
my mind is blown.
This movie, we were rewatching it because we watched it the first time with a bunch of friends, and I laughed the whole movie. And I said, we have to do this on the show one day.
We watched it on Bad Movie Night.
Yeah, with a bunch of friends, and we were drinking and, of course, making fun of it and talking. And so I wanted to rewatch it because a lot of the time, the movies we watch there are basically me vetting what we could do on the show. Because I'm like, anytime there's a this is a classic, I have to hold off until we forget about it, which is what we did here. We forgot about it completely. And I was like, okay, TNA, we have to put this movie on.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's ripe with TNA.
We've done this only maybe a couple of times where we didn't go in completely blind. This is like the second or third time we've done that where we didn't know what we were in for. This time we knew what we were in for, but it was like watching it fresh because we're sober.
Well, yeah, because there's only two things I really remembered about this film anyway. Number one being Dick Miller, and number two being the beautiful...
You remember Dick Miller?
Yes.
Okay, so I thought you were going to say the one actress's breasts.
Well, that's her second one. The second one is the beautiful round bosom of this
We're talking
pretty
about
girl.
Monique Gabrielle, who was in Deathstalker 2. The Return of Swamp Thing, which we did on the show.
Yeah.
She played Miss Poinsettia.
Oh.
And we couldn't stop laughing because she disappears from the movie. And we found out that the director kept calling her pointers because her nipples were hard all the time. And I guess she walked upset. I have no idea.
Well, she has most beautiful breasts of anybody I've seen in the 90s.
They're quite stellar.
In any 90s movie, she has the most beautiful, perfect breasts I've ever seen.
It's a little crazy because we couldn't stop talking about her boobs during this watching again. We had a good 5 minutes staring at them, saying to each other, well, are they real? Are they fake? What's going on with these breasts?
Yeah, I don't know still. I'll never know, but they were glorious.
Yeah, she's in another movie that we watched with our group of friends as well that I also want to return to. And that's Hard to Die, which we have to bring back because that's another one that I'm like, I can't get enough of it. So
is she gratuitously nude in that one too?
You don't remember it at all, huh?
No, Hard to Die. Good. Which one's that? Frank Stallone?
No. Oh. It's a bunch of women again fighting a killer in a, it's very confusing,
like
in
a
shopping mall for lingerie, maybe? We don't really understand any of it. Definitely have to return to it because it's one of the highlights recently.
All right, I'll rewatch that one.
The actress, she actually isn't a Floridian. Apparently, she's in Florida. She retired into Florida and ran an adult film company in Florida. Mm-hmm. Don't know how much of it's true or not, but that's apparently what happened to this actress. But yeah, she showed up in a lot of movies we've watched. Already one on the show, on our podcast here. So, yeah. But, yeah, of all the things that we remembered about the movie, it was her boobs, and I remembered there was a wolf cartoon character that goes like this with his tongue.
Well, I don't remember what he looked like. I remember one tune in it, but I don't remember what he looked like. But I do remember Dick Miller. That's it.
And there's one other thing that definitely stood out in my mind because it's something that you can't unsee. And that's the opening of this film. So let's talk about it a little bit because on the show, we spoil the whole friggin' movie. We talk it out. So let's get into the movie because the opening of this movie is the thing that you can't unsee once you see it. And that would be actor David Carradine, who I know Joe loves.
I've outlawed that motherfucker in this house.
And I brought him back. And now, I brought him back in a way that nobody will ever be able to unsee once they see this movie. Because in the opening of this movie, he hangs himself. And it is insane to watch, especially knowing how he died in real life. And this is like one of the craziest opens of a movie. He has no lines of dialogue. And he has a what looks like the Necronomicon, but like the Necronomicon's mentally challenged brother-in-law, you know?
Yeah. It doesn't look like a, I mean, it's awful. The book is awful.
But it also has a great voice. It talks and goes,
"I never knew you were one to jump to conclusions."
they gave it a one-liner.
Yeah, he says like jokes throughout this movie.
It was not
Well, he apparently he is haunting. The book is haunting.
Oh, the oven's heated.
Apparently, the book is haunted and is taunting him because he, during a thunderstorm, the only thought that he can has to apparently beat the book. We don't really know because the movie just starts. And by the way, it starts with the title card that tells you this is exactly a true story. I know because this is how it happened. And it's exactly how it happened. And then it says the director's name.
Yeah.
Man, that was a quote from the director or whatever. Yeah. And then, so we don't know what's going on, but this man just hangs himself at the book. And then the book makes a one-liner. Like, I thought you'd hang in longer.
Oh, man.
Or something like that. And then the book disappears and he goes, "Whoa, I'm fading away." And he disappears. And then we get an incredibly long title sequence. What looks like something out of Reanimator. And it actually looks decent, like it with decent does. Animation and stuff like that. Like
that's where the budget went.
Yeah. Apparently. But it's way too long.
I mean, it does go on way too long, yeah.
And then we cut to present day, apparently. Present day 92, apparently. Where we see legendary actor from B-movie actor, anyways. Dick Miller.
Excuse me, he's in Gremlins.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, when people like who might not know Dick Miller, I think that the one thing that people, that's all us, people know. Like,
Gremlins.
For us, yeah, I was going to say for us, he's been in tons of movies.
He's an all-star.
Yeah, but for the mainstream audiences, Gremlins is the standout because he plays
Mr. Futterman.
Mr. Futterman, who is the character who actually says they're Gremlins.
Yep.
And he comes back in the sequel, which doesn't make much sense because he seems like he's murdered in the first one.
Yeah, we know he's not.
Yeah.
He's okay.
But to us, he's a legend. And he shows up in this movie. He stares at a house that seems to be fenced in. And it seems like a giant, like a mansion.
So this is like a colonial home.
Yeah, right?
And it does not fit on the street. So, like, picture just, like, any street in, like, Los Angeles. And they're just regular single-family homes. But this thing, it's, like, ridiculous. It does not fit. It looks like an old, like, city hall building.
That's what exactly I was going to say, town hall.
Like, that they just, you know, it was all fucked up and crushed or whatever, and so they just asked if they can film there.
Yeah.
It's not a house. It doesn't, I mean, the inside shots would not really.
Yeah, the inside of this house, the inside of where the movie takes place is not the inside of this house.
No.
It's clearly a different door.
It is. Yeah, 100%.
It's all wood paneling inside, and then outside dreadful. It looks like a like we're talking about.
Yeah.
It does not match.
It doesn't. But like Dick Miller, has brought these four women.
This is where we meet our main characters.
Yeah, we meet our four main characters. They are hired by Dick Miller, and they're going to be paid $100 each to clean this home so that the new owners of the home can move in on Monday.
Yeah, apparently over the weekend, yeah.
Yeah, so they have to stay in this house over the weekend. So our four main characters, now, can we just please describe each one of these women?
I'll name them all. So our first one, our main character, is Megan, Meg.
She's the one with the glorious rack.
Yeah, Monique Gabrielle. Mm-hmm. And then we have Roxanne.
She's the, what looks like an 80s aerobics teacher in yeah, this.
You said soccer mom.
No.
Oh, no, no. Mm-mm. This is actually aerobic. Yeah, you're right.
The black-haired girl.
Yes, yes. She's played by Madison Stone, another Floridian porn star known for her punk rock look. Mm-hmm. She quit the business and started a rock band called Kiss the Monkey.
Nice.
You can find that on Facebook. So that's Roxanne. Then we have Terry.
Terry looks like
that's the soccer
47-year-old soccer mom. She's supposed to be, now these are supposed to be college girls, college age girls. So we're thinking 21 to 25, perhaps?
Yeah.
Okay, no. Mm-mm. Terry is clearly 47. She has that look. Like a mom that's like just dropped her kids off at like freaking baseball practice.
Don't worry, as your team leader, I've got everything we need to get through the weekend.
Did you bring any men? Oh, I see you're hiding them under your shirt.
Sign up, Roxanne.
Oh, too bad. It's a couple of midgets.
Well, at one point in the movie, because they're supposed to be in school together. Apparently, yeah. Like you said sorority, which I didn't hear.
No, I don't. I think I asked you if they were in a sorority.
Okay, I don't know. Yeah,
I don't think so.
Yeah,
because they were treating Meg a little different from.
That she maybe was like a new pledge or a new person in the house or in their sorority. Because at one point, Terry calls her kid.
She calls her kid a couple times in the movie,
and then I was like, "All right,
wait a minute."
So maybe she is like the den mother or something. But I didn't know who she was.
Solidifying the fact that she looks 47.
Well, she's played by Suzanne Egger, and she was in Shock 'Em Dead as one of the groupies.
Yeah, I love that movie so much.
Yeah, that's another movie we did on the show. And at the time of filming, she was dating the director.
Ah, okay.
Which makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
Yeah, and then we also have Jan.
Who looks like she just stepped out of a Whitesnake video. Totally 80s,
yeah.
But she's the prettiest one of them all, I think,
so
in
you
my
say,
opinion.
Yeah. And she's played by Barbara Dare, and she's another ex-porn star, of course, during uh-huh. this. And she is now a substance abuse counselor.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Interesting. I like looking into these facts about what happened to these people. So.
Yeah, she looks like if Bon Jovi, like John Bon Jovi, was a woman. That's what she kind of looks like. She's very John Bon Jovi-ish.
Jeez.
She does look like that.
You know what? I'm on board for this. This is a good comparison. This is true. I love this. During the movie, you said to me, they are both way older than the other character. And I blew your mind because I did the math and found out that the Meg character is actually older than the one that you're talking about looks like John Bon Jovi.
So we'll call her Joan Bon Jovi. She looks like, older. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean here, but I mean, no. She looks older. But
yeah, we did the math. I did the math because we were like, they're 40. Like, this character is like 40. And I said, shockingly, she's 29 years old. And the other one, Meg, is 30. So
That's
I'm like,
crazy.
Holy crap. Like, they don't. Like, the one girl does look older, but then that's another thing of the 80s where you go, oh my God, all the people in the 80s look way older than they are. And it's shocking when you look it up, because you just assume when you watch one of those high school movies, you go, everybody in high school in the 80s in these movies were like 40, yeah, the actors. Yes. But they're not.
I mean,
every time we look it up, we're like, oh my God, he was really younger.
Seriously, every single actor in the 1980s that was portraying a high school kid was literally 40 years old. It's crazy. I mean, case in point, Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds. Yeah, but he was supposed to be in college. But still, he looked like he was 58.
But that makes sense, because that character, they kept saying he got left back. That was the running joke, that he was like an old man. But some of the other characters, if you go like Breakfast Club, Anthony Michael Hall wasn't that old during the filming of that movie.
Anthony Michael Hall looked like a high school student until he was 45. Yeah. Okay. But
it's like Michael Cera. He can still do it.
Michael Cera can, yeah. But I'm telling you, Judd Nelson, he looked older.
Yeah. And I don't know how old he was at the time of filming.
I thought that he was 30.
Was he?
I thought he was.
Because he is the oldest.
I think he was the oldest, yeah.
It's interesting.
Yep. And I think that Anthony Michael Hall was the youngest, and I think the next youngest was Molly Ringwald, if I recall.
That makes sense. Yeah. Emilio Estevez looked that old forever. For a really long time. Yeah.
He looked the same until he was in Young Guns.
So we're introduced to these characters. They all get out, and we are introduced to the sexuality, the TNA aspect of this movie, instantly when they all bend into the car. So we get a nice shot of the Daisy Dukes. And Dick Miller watching that, finding out that one of them is a contortionist, which he mistakes for a political party. And they tell him no. But so now they have a time limit and to go clean the house. And it is like really early day. I would say it's like before noon when they get in the house.
Yeah.
Not a cloud in the sky.
Nope.
They get in the house and instantly, when they go, the first thing they decide to do is clean the basement. Or at least it doesn't look like a basement, because every time the characters walk off, it looks like they walk to a barn.
Yeah, it doesn't look... So when you go to a regular basement, you're going down a couple of stairs. No, they go around the house to get in.
They go around the house and they just walk into a door.
It's a door.
So it's like, it's not a basement. It's like a garage of some sort.
It looks like a part of the regular house. It's not at all a basement.
But they do say basement, right? Every time.
Yeah, they do.
Because it's a running joke that this movie is aware of itself. So it's like semi-spoofing itself.
Oh, it's definitely
because spoofing. They keep mentioning like, oh, why do these things always start off with girls walking down into the basement?
Right. No, there's none of that. They walk around the house. Yeah. They're literally still in the
house. In fact, if you look when they walk in the door, there's a window.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then one of them says, someone turn on the light. And she's like, I'm too scared because it's dark in here.
So yeah, turn on the fucking light, you twit.
But the sun is coming through behind them.
But this is not like one of those windows that, like, you know, when the basement has like a tiny window and you could just see the grass, like, you know, from the window. No, no. This is a real window.
It's a real window.
Like, it's a real window, because like, in your house.
Multiple times they just show them walk in the door. Like, they just show them walk in.
You can tell that these areas were probably just built, you know, for this particular... It was like a set.
I'm sure that they had... like a warehouse they filmed in, or in another house they did, but they only had the outside of that house,
the exterior, just
the exterior of them getting out of the car.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. And then everything else was inside, and they only showed that house again at night.
Yes.
Because, okay, so they had to clean this basement. Now, first off, we learned very quickly that these actresses, and I use that term lightly, are just horrendous at delivering dialogue.
It's the worst.
Put this down.
All right.
Oh.
What was that stuff you were saying about the new owners disappearing?
Well, this house has a long history of mayhem and madness. Pretty strange and unusual and weird things have happened here.
Such as?
Well, there was the Mortimer family, the last ones to live here. They simply vanished one night after about a month of moving in.
What happened to them?
Nobody really knows, but it's assumed they took off in the middle of the night, so freaked out, they left everything behind.
Everything?
Even their CD player.
No shit.
And the one in particular, Terry.
Terry, the soccer mom.
The one that's...
Oh, my God.
Now that I know that she was dating the director, it makes a lot of sense because, wow, she is atrocious.
She has this, like... It's like a repeated wah-wah face on. She can't deliver a line to save her life. She's the worst actress I have ever seen.
Yeah, it's bad. It's reading lines off of a cue card. Bad.
Yeah, and everything she says is like, it's kind of like elevated to like a comedic, like, well, she sure did lose her head.
Yeah, and it always sounds like a question when it shouldn't be.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Oh my God, she's awful.
We have to go down to the basement?
Yeah.
Somebody find a light?
Wait, is that a sacrificial dagger?
Yeah. Maybe we should take it with us and sell it online? Like, it's just like what the hell?
Well, that's sell it online. They didn't have online.
I'm sorry. I know. I was just adding. But yeah, they actually find a treasure chest, and they go, "Look, there's a chest over here." And then Jay like, "Yeah, there's lots of them all over this place." That's what one of them says. And then she's like, "No, but this one has weird writing on it." And they're like, "I wonder what it says." And for a minute there, the language changes and tells you, "Please don't open this. But for the love of God, don't open
it." It literally says that. I think it says, yeah. "For the love of God,
don't open." I think open so. This. Yeah. And they can't see it. And of course, they do open it. And now, this house is apparently supposed to have been a scene of a murder in the past.
This house has history.
Histories of murders.
Yes, and so Terry is the one, she's the soccer mom. She's opening this chest and grabs out. Okay, this is one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
She literally just grabs out, "Oh, look at this." And she's holding a human skull. Like it's like a toy or something.
And then the other ones don't react like screaming that they found a head.
No.
One of them just goes, "Where's the rest of him?"
Womp.
Yeah. I wish it was like a womp womp. Then it's totally dead serious like, delivery.
Maybe he's in here. Oh, look at this. It's a dagger.
Yeah. It's one of those daggers that's like a snake, like a snake dagger, you know? And they're like, "Maybe this is worth money. Maybe we could sell it."
Like, the line delivery, I swear to God, you could have shaved 20 minutes off this movie if they would have just delivered the lines faster.
Well, that's good, because it's only an hour and 20 minutes
Something like that. They could have literally shaved 20 minutes off this. The way that they deliver the lines is so slow.
Yeah.
And, like, you can tell that the only experience in movies that these people have had has been porn. Okay.
"This must be where all the missing bodies are buried."
"Don't worry. We're not doing any digging.
It's not in our job description. Come on."
And also, porn actresses are better actresses than these freaking broads.
Well, this is before they actually wanted real story.
Right? Oh my God. Porn. I mean, first of all, I don't understand why you need story in porn. I mean, we don't care. Really? Does someone
Some
care?
People need the setup, you know?
No. No. But, like, these women are, like, just hands down the worst. I mean, if you're going to get sexy actresses, you can just go to Las Vegas and find beautiful women that aren't really, that don't have a lot of, I guess, experience in acting. They'll probably do a better job than these girls.
I feel like they're not, look, they're attractive. They're not ugly women.
They are.
I would say that Terry... You could tell that she's there because she was dating the director. That's the only reason, because she's, you know, okay. She actually reminds me of the mother from the Goonies. Like, that's how I looked at her. I was like, it's just someone's mom.
It's so weird thinking that way, because we saw her boobs. Odd. So now it looks like I feel like I've seen the mother from the Goonies boobs.
So weird. Well, they find a human skull and a sacrificial dagger, and they find a book. One of them, no. They find the dagger and the skull, and they're just like, "Let's go back up to the house because we're done for the day." You know?
Yes, and now my
They haven't done anything.
They haven't done anything. They have not cleaned a single thing. So they find this crap in this chest. But now my favorite scene comes, one of my favorite scenes, where for no reason, just a gratuitous thing to happen, the one who is playing, what's her name? The black-haired girl.
Oh, yeah, Roxanne.
Roxanne. She keeps picking on our... what's her name? Megan? She keeps picking on her a little bit. Like, say, I'll show you how to please the man.
Yeah, well, she's like, do you want to see the dance I did to get my guy on the football team? And it was like, okay, this isn't a dance.
No.
This is a striptease.
It's a striptease. So this is the most gratuitous thing. It's like, okay, so she just starts stripping in front of the girls.
Well, Megan's all into it. Megan's like, yeah, I would love to learn.
She's
I'm a virgin.
To learn how to be sexy and stuff. Yeah. Because she's always covering up her body and whatever. So she's the conservative one. But then you've got this one who's doing a striptease, and she takes her pants off and has like the longest butt cheeks. It's like a totally 80s butt. I don't think it's that bad. They're long. Her underwear literally come up to her armpits. Like, they're really high underwear. And I was like, wait, first of all, when does her butt end? Because it just seems to go on forever. She has, like, the longest butt. But she does this striptease, and she looks really good naked. She's attractive. But it's just gratuitous for no reason whatsoever. And then...
I mean, she does a whole dance where she gets completely naked, down to the G-string, and that's it.
Yeah, she's wearing her G-string, but, like...
I love the music there.
It makes no sense at all. But for whatever reason, if you can explain to me why Meg gets upset over this and runs away.
So she goes, Meg, come up here and learn how to dance with me. So she does.
Yeah.
So they start, like, she unbuttons her top, and then she's wearing a bra, and she clearly has giant boobs. And they start going, wow, you've been hiding these things?
Yeah, so she gets embarrassed.
And they're like, yeah. And so she gets really embarrassed because she's a virgin, apparently. And so she runs off upset.
I'd be like, first of all, if I had that set, I would just take off my bra and be like, look, bitches, okay, these are my girls. Look at these girls.
Which Meg basically does upstairs alone when she gets to a mirror. She completely takes off all of her clothes and stares at her breasts.
I don't think I even blinked.
Yeah, no, it's hard to unsee them, even now while we're talking about them.
Quite literally the nicest pair of boobs. I was baffled. I was like, wow.
You know that shocking thing when you see a woman's body, like, you know, you see a celebrity and then they show their boobs for the first time and you're like, wow, where did those come from? There's been like times throughout movies that we've ever seen where that shocked me, where a boob showage has just completely shocked me. Like, I was like, what the hell, where did those come from?
For real,
this is on that list. I think, like, Halloween 2, there's one in Halloween 2. I'm like, where the hell did those come from with the nurse?
Oh yeah.
And Daddario in
True Detective. Yeah.
when those got released, every time, wow, I've been like, whoa, I did not see this coming. Like, this is more of a plot twist than M. Night Shyamalan.
I mean, yeah, it's like when Halle Berry whipped out her girls in
Monster's Ball? Swordfish.
Yeah, Swordfish. I was like, whoa. Yeah, it was...
She didn't even whip them out. She has a book in front of them. She just drops it.
Yeah, it was very gratuitous.
I heard they paid her like $5,000 a boob.
Wow.
To do that or something. Because they filmed it twice, because there's another uncut, there's a cut version where she has a top on.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's a nice set, too. But, I mean, honestly, it was just gratuitous. Like, but when I saw those girls, I was like, damn. That's like the pair that every woman wishes they had. I mean, and they were just freaking glorious.
We're literally sitting there during this scene of this movie just talking about them. Like, look at the shape over here. Look how perfect they look on the side.
Look at the nipple placement. Look how round the side is.
What's the guy in Friday the 13th remake when he says that?
Yes. Oh, my God. You have perfect nipple placement? Yeah. This girl does. I mean, she had beautiful, perfect breast, perfect.
So funny.
So, moving on from this, I mean, this is a TNA conversation, but moving along.
I don't think there's a movie where we can ever have the opposite conversation of a guy's junk.
No.
A penis conversation.
No, the only time I was shocked, like really, really shocked
Kevin
to see
Bacon.
Some junk, that one, and then also Barry Keoghan. when he was dancing around naked in Saltburn. Oh my god, I was like, what? What? Okay.
Yeah, yes. that shocked me. That's a good one. Yeah, that,
and I couldn't stop looking at it.
Ewan McGregor too in Trainspotting. I remember that shocked me.
Oh,
too.
I don't remember his junk.
Okay.
But I do remember Bacon's Bacon and
Bacon's Bacon.
Kyogen's Kyogen. So yeah, that was something. But
sounds like forms of sausage.
Yeah. Oh, and the one thing that stands out too, even though it was fake, is Mark Wahlberg's dong when it came out of the thing.
Yeah, that's
it
right.
It was fake,
yeah.
But I was like, oh.
You knew it was fake though, so I guess it doesn't count. Yeah.
Yeah. But I was like, okay, that's kind of neat, you know, whatever. Yeah. But so anyway, so enter the, all right, we're moving on.
Well, she's upstairs doing that. And at the same time, there's a knock at the door.
It's David Carradine.
And it's complete. Now this is like now it's become the parody of horror movies because outside is a thunderstorm.
Yeah, can we talk about what he looks like in this? He looks like...
No, David Carradine.
He looks like the Quaker Oats guy, but has gone rotten. Like, he's rotting. The Quaker Oats guy is rotting. And he's just, like, got this gray, nasty, stringy hay hair, a pilgrim hat, a cloak, like a gray cloak, and he looks like he's decaying.
Yeah, he looks like a wizard of some sort from something. But, yeah, I get what you're saying. He does. He's got, like... gray makeup on and he has like rings around his eyes, but he keeps doing wide eye acting.
He was just terrible. Okay, can we not? Anyway, so he delivers this book to these girls. Okay,
he forces it on them. He says delivery.
Now mind you, he's outside, you see a shot of him, and he just makes the book make the book appear. So the book just appears in his hand, and he brings it to the girls, knocks on the door, brings it to the girls, and gives them the book.
A wrapped up version, roped up, wrapped up package that says open immediately.
Says open immediately. So
I know this because the girl follows the letters with her finger and goes, yes. Open immediately.
Yeah, like she's...
You said, I'm shocked they can read.
Yeah, I mean, oh my god, these girls, I cannot. But yeah, so they open the book and they're breezing through it, and they can't read it, it's in another language, but they do see art in there of like what appears to be some sort of a demon, like a picture of a demon.
Yes. Well, they can't read it, but they know someone who can. So they go get Meg because Meg is a genius and okay. She can read all languages apparently. So she comes downstairs and she reads it and she gives us our exposition.
Yep.
There's a demon and by the way, you would usually think Necronomicon, you got all that cool art, you know, drawn in like complete blood pencil and all that. And then this is just like very cheap cartoon character drawn in the book.
Yep. That's what you got. Yeah. That's what you got.
And like, it's like a wolf with his tongue out.
It's.
But like a Tasmanian devil version of it.
I was like, wait a minute. So they're showing us this picture. This is... We need more than this. Like, yeah. I was like, through the whole movie, the first viewing, I was like, we only have one tune. Like, so we... That's it. One tune.
Yeah.
But the tune is, he's so.
Well, when she reads it, he comes to life. But they don't know. They don't know. And they're going to go up to bed. And Roxanne is going to stay behind because she invited her boyfriend over to have sex. The football player.
Oh, his name is Biff.
Biff. Oh, wow. What a shock. And he looks like a Biff, too, by the way. And he looks the oldest in the whole movie. You know, maybe under Carradine, but still.
He looks like a Chuck. Yeah. He looks like a...
I guess so.
He looks like a football oaf from the 80s.
Yeah, so he does. He's like, a lot of shit, this actor.
Is he? I don't know
he's
him.
In a bunch. When I looked him up, I was laughing. He was in like 30 movies I had seen. I was shocked. But like basically bit roles. But yeah, she's waiting for him to come over. Now, before he gets there... She's waiting for him, so she's trying to prepare. First off, she completely gets naked for no reason in front of us and puts on a whole sexy lingerie. And she also decides to go open a bottle of what I think she thinks is champagne.
It's Boone's Farm.
We know this because she tries to get the cork out, but there's no cork. This is Boone's Farm, so there's a screw cap. So we watch her try to... pop a pop top out of it without being possible.
It goes on.
And you can clearly see it. You can clearly see it. And I was laughing out loud during this because she's trying to bite it off. She's trying to. She actually falls on the floor at one point. Her legs go up like a cartoon character.
But did you realize that she's holding the neck, like the bottle's neck, and not the top of the screw caps? She's not even twisting. She's twisting the neck of the bottle. Like, she's not even. Her hand is not even on the lid on the cap at all.
Well, she keeps trying to get the cap off like it's a cork to shoot out, dying. Like a bottle of champagne. And you can clearly see because she's not covering it up. It's a screw cap. And it takes her forever to even figure out that you can unwrap it. So she finally unwraps it. She is trying so hard to get the cork out that doesn't exist that she falls on the floor and puts it between her legs and tries to pop it there. But then she reaches up and knocks an entire plate on top of herself with all of, like, glasses on it. I was laughing so hard during this whole thing. It's so funny.
It's bumbling and ridiculous. It's supposed to be, though. It's supposed to be.
Did they think we couldn't see the cap? Because I guess they think, oh, no one's got a big screen TV in the 90s.
I guess.
Like, so. A small screen, no one will ever know that it's not a pop top, like a cork.
I mean, anybody watching the first 5 minutes of this movie knows that this movie is just dumb.
Yeah, I know, but how far and long this goes on, when she finally figures out she can unscrew it, she gets a silver platter and puts two paper cups on it.
I know. I asked you, I'm like, why does she need the platter? Just, yeah. Really?
She carries a platter and for the bottle what? And two plastic cups.
What?
Like, they're not even plastic. It's like those
paper cups.
Dixie cups, yes. The ones that you used to have next to your sink when you were a kid.
Yes. Like, she's trying to be all fancy, but then she has paper cups and she's drinking Boone's Farm.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I can't with this chick right now.
Well, when she changes her clothes in the other room now, and the other girls go up to sleep, by the way, and when they go up to sleep, we have to talk about it, because the one girl, they lay down like they're in a coffin. On flat on the floor, there is no, like, blanket. There's like
they have a sleeping bag.
It's a sleeping bag that they don't get in. They all get in lingerie.
No, they lay on top of the sleeping bags.
They lay on top of the sleeping bags flat on a floor, and they lay, and one of them lays like a mannequin died, like just like flat.
Oh my God.
It's so funny.
It's amazing to me that one of them is supposed to be smart, but they literally have the combined IQ of a peanut. It's
wild.
Outrageous. It's wild. Outrageous. Like, I mean, I know this is supposed to be slapsticky and funny, but it just, I was like, oh my God, come on. So.
Well, when the girl's bending over and doing all the things in the shot, we see the cartoon character now. But my favorite part is when she comes out of the kitchen, the cartoon character is in front of her, but she can't see a giant cartoon wolf in the house.
He looks like the Tasmanian devil.
He does. He hides behind a chair, but he's hiding in her sight.
Yeah.
She's walking toward him.
Yeah, she's walking literally toward him. She would be able to see him.
When she's posing and getting all the clothes on and getting naked and everything, the wolf is like, blah, 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 like doing all the stuff.
Yeah, like picture Jim Carrey in the mask when he first sees Cameron Diaz.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Which is a joke from Droopy.
Yes.
That was
yes.
What that cartoon character was that he was
that's
doing.
That's pretty much what we saw. So he was like, oh my God, he tries to molest her.
What? Yeah, oh, he does. He oh my God. Do his voice.
I can't.
You can't. He's like, hey,
baby, yeah. Look at those breasts.
He's like, I'm gonna get some of those boobs.
I'm gonna get some of those boobs.
Whoa! He like jumps on her. When she finally sees him, he pounces on her, and they animated it looking like it might be sexually molesting her. I don't know if that's the point, but it does lick her top off completely. It breaks it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, booby boobies, yeah.
It's so ridiculous. It's so slapsticky.
We can't tell, but I guess the suggestion is that he does sexually molest her and she dies. We just hear her scream. We see her face screaming.
He's definitely inserting himself into her.
I think something like that is happening.
Like,
we
literally
can't really tell.
Because she becomes him. So she turns into
turns into her. He uses, like, it's very confusing if he's turning into characters or if he's using their corpses. Because at one point, we'll talk about it later, but yeah, she dies off camera and the girls upstairs hear the screaming.
They think she's having sex.
And they're all telling her, oh, it's the sex that
Biff is here. They're having sex. But this is not, okay, first of all, it's like a murder scream. not a pleasure.
Yeah, that's what
scream.
The one is saying.
And they don't even run down just to make sure she's okay. Like, yeah, sure. So you'll walk in on them doing it. Okay, big deal. But just to make sure she's fine.
Yeah.
They don't even get up, okay?
One of them is sent down, but she doesn't see anything.
Doesn't see anything. But then, I'm sorry. The three girls together are just dumb.
Yeah. They're laying flat is so damn funny.
Oh, my God.
So now Biff does show up, and he, of course, is suckered in because she is now, the tune is her.
Yeah, so I don't know if you find, if you came home, right, from work, and I'm just wearing, like, one of your button-down shirts, and mm-hmm. I'm half open, and I'm just covered in blood all over my chest.
Yes.
And I have it dripping out of my mouth. Would you be like, hey, baby, let's have sexy time? No. You'd be like, what the fuck happened to you?
Yeah. You know, now that I think about it, didn't Meg go down and see her covered in blood?
Yeah, she did.
She goes, oh, she's all weird and she's covered in some blood.
Yeah. Like, and they, the other two twits don't think anything. They don't think anything of it. They're just like, whatever, whatever. And but, so then she starts killing Biff and he's screaming. And the three twits upstairs are all like, oh, what's going on?
Oh, no, he's screaming.
Oh, but. Yeah. That doesn't sound like a pleasure scream.
Well, that one says that. The other ones go, oh, that happens sometimes too.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. And then they're like, well, it sounds like a murder scream. Well, go investigate it again.
Yeah.
And she goes down there and she finds Biff dead under like a blanket. Or like, it looks like a rug is thrown on top of him.
It's like a cheap rug.
So she runs upstairs and she gets the girls and makes them come down. And she's like, well, she screams and they come down finally. And then they go, what is it? And she's like, Biff, he's dead. And then they're like, looks like he's under that tapestry. And the other one's like, and then she goes,
it's clearly an area rug.
It's a rug. And then she goes, looks like he's under that tapestry. And then she goes, it's actually a sacrificial shawl or something like that.
Oh,
it's
a sacrificial shroud.
A shroud.
Yes.
Meg, are you alright? Biff's dead.
No shit. Why is he covered with this tapestry?
Someone's trying to hide the body. That's like sweeping him under the rug. It's a soul shroud.
A what?
A soul shroud. When souls are offered up to Satan, they go by means of a soul shroud to hell. Sort of like gift wrapping.
Gift wrapping? Happy fucking birthday. How'd you know that?
It says so right there on the corner.
There's a fucking tag on the
There's
goddamn
a tag on
thing.
It. She saw the whole thing while she's worrying about a dead body.
It was so funny. Oh my God. So Biff is dead.
Can I point something out to you?
Yes.
I know it's not true, but there's a part of me that believes that Meg in Family Guy was created off this character.
Do you think so? Why?
The glasses are the same. She has the big glasses and she has her hair color.
No, she doesn't. Meg has brown hair.
No, it's reddish.
Nope.
Isn't it like reddish?
No,
like
Lois has red hair.
Oh, yeah.
Lois has red hair.
So why doesn't... Are you sure?
Yes, I'm positive. Look her up. She has brown hair, dark brown hair.
I don't know what it is, but every time in my head, I kept hearing, shut up, Meg.
It's just because her name's Meg.
I know, but they talk to her like that all the time.
Anyone named Meg is like, you hear that. You just hear it in your head.
There's a part of me that believes it. Like 100% someone saw this movie and was like, oh, we have to call this.
Oh, God. Well, okay. So... I have a couple questions about David Carradine, but we're going to get to it. So anyway.
Well, yeah. So they found a dead body. So they naturally are screaming. Now we cut to Dick Miller gets a call from the neighbor.
Yes,
but hears them screaming.
Yes.
And so Dick Miller now is
down the street.
He's down the street. He's like a pervert. Yeah. We didn't talk about him. He's like a pervert old man. He's in so much shit. He's like a voiceover actor. He's been
in
so many voiceover acting things. Yeah, like a legendary, like the 80s and 70s. And
wow.
Yeah, it's insane. And he calls Dick Miller, who is watching his own movie, Bucket of Blood. Now, we know this because we watch at least 5 minutes of it.
We do. And I thought that was pretty funny. So I was like, okay, this is a little bit gratuitous. It's a little bit forced in. It was funny, odd. But I'm like, okay, we have already watched this movie before 700 times.
Yes.
And now we're watching it again in a movie.
In a movie. And watching just, the actor watch himself.
Yes. And then he like makes a joke that, oh, this guy should have gotten an Oscar.
Yeah, why did this guy never win an Oscar?
Like, okay. All right. That's cute. Okay, so, fine.
I mean, he's acting. So he's saying that he is not Dick Miller. You know what
yes,
I mean?
Like, he's not Dick Miller.
It would have been funny if they said Dick Miller was playing himself in this movie. You know, yeah. Something like to make fun of himself.
Yeah.
But instead, no, he's watching himself. We watch him watch so much of it. Now, one of the craziest parts, he finally answers the phone and says, okay, I'll go out and check it out. Well, he goes to leave. And now he's talking about, like, the whole time he's talking about, like, how hot the women are. And he's, like, all into them bending over. And he's, like, all into how pretty they are.
Yep.
He goes to walk out of his apartment. And he is stopped by a beautiful woman in lingerie who says, Bert, I think his name's Bert. Bert, it's Friday night. And he goes, and? And she's like, it's Friday night. And she shows her boobs. And he goes, oh, why does every week have to have a Friday?
Like
he doesn't
want to
have sex with this girl.
First of all, she's 40 years younger than him. And it's like such a chore for him to have sex with this woman. Are you kidding?
And she's stunning. She's stunning. And I was like laughing. We looked her up too. And she's had a bunch of movies we've seen too.
Oh, really?
And I was like, why isn't she the main character? Like, wasn't she one of the women that are in the movie?
Yeah, she was definitely attractive.
I think the actress doesn't like horror movies. So I think that's why she's the only scene she's in. But he goes, I have to go. And so he starts to leave. And she goes into the room mad. And you hear her use what you're supposed to go vibrator. But it is a jackhammer going off. And he goes, you're going to hurt yourself one of these days.
Oh, my God. It was hysterical. I was loving it. I was laughing.
Hey, Bert, are you fucking kidding me
right
now?
Wait a minute. First of all, okay. Like, if there's no way that this woman even... why are you with this old man? I don't understand this.
Not only that, why was he watching Bucket of Blood?
When he could have been in the room with her.
With this woman.
He could have been in the room with her, and now he's watching himself on TV.
He's watching, yeah. Smoking a cigar, drunk. And this is really funny, too. He seems very, like, not that drunk. When we see him again show up at the house, he's wrecked.
Okay, yeah, he's not that drunk. When he gets to the house, he's wasted. He can't even get his words out. So they open the door when he knocks, and they're in their lingerie. And they're trying to hide the body of Biff before he gets in there. Now, I have a question for you.
Please.
Why don't they tell him, oh my God, send the police? Yeah. Go get the police something.
Yeah, well, they say, well, we won't get paid.
And then our genius girl with the huge knockers says, oh, but, you know, is $100 worth getting implicated in a murder?
And they go, yes.
Oh, my God. First of all you have to do is go up to a dude and say, hi, can I have $100? And they will give it to you.
Probably will.
Because you're beautiful.
Honestly, all these women in this movie.
Yeah. I was like, oh, my God, the things that they're doing right now. And they just...
$100 for 3 days.
For 3 days of work? I'm like, what? First of all, we only see literally two rooms in this whole entire place. And which I was going to point out to you, this is supposed to be a huge mansion.
Yes. It does seem like there's only one room.
Yeah. They have their sleeping bags in one room.
Yes.
I was like, okay, well, that's budget.
Yeah.
But it was... So anyway...
Well, while they go to try to hide the body and Bert's waiting outside, that's when Roxanne shows up as the tune. You know, and she lures him to the basement, a.k.a. the barn in the back. So he goes with her to the barn, and she now tries to
seduce him
sexually, which he walks up, and he just walks up to her and just goes, oh, man. Basically, like, what's his face in the Tough Guys Don't Dance or Tough Guys?
Oh, God.
Well, she grows fangs like a piranha and bites his junk off.
Yeah, but you know what's funny about this is that there was a half-naked chick in his apartment, and he left her, but now he's interested
in this woman.
Yeah. Okay.
So he's like, oh, man. And then he dies off camera. We just hear him screaming from the bite or whatever. And then that's cut. So when the girls open the door again to let Bert in, he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So when they shut the door again, they're like, what's going on? That's when Roxanne shows up to them now. Actually, is it Roxanne at this point? I don't remember if Roxanne shows up to them first. Yes, she does. She comes in the room. And she goes, hey, everybody. Oh, no. They go, where's Bert? I remember now. Okay, sorry. Scratch that. They shut the door. They open the door, and they don't see Bert's out there. So they go looking for him. They go, well, we should search the whole house because Roxanne's also missing.
Yep.
Right? So they're like, well, let's go and search the basement first. And they're like, why would you want to search the basement first? Well, you know, I don't want to go there last. So they go down in the basement, and then that's when they find Dick Miller dead, and also Roxanne dead in a treasure chest.
Yeah.
So they run back into the house screaming, right? And when they get in the house, Roxanne shows up, and she goes, I was just kidding. It was all a prank.
We thought you were dead.
Yeah, was it some kind of joke or something?
I'm sorry. I couldn't resist playing a trick on you. I mean, this place is so spooky.
You mean Biff and Bert are in on this too? Ooh, I could just kill you guys.
Please, not yet. What's with the book?
Meg thought some drawing came to life and was trying to kill all of us.
That's pretty far out. Can I see?
Remember that horrible drawing? The one of that ugly, disgusting, repulsive, inhuman slime beast?
Yes, I remember.
Well, the drawing is gone.
Meg, I think your eyes must be playing tricks on you.
And she goes, basically she says, I am that monster or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. So she tries to kill them, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember how it works out here.
Well,
but
she does kill them.
Well,
she does.
One by one,
except
they go into the barn again.
Our Hooters McGee, she makes it out, Meg. So she's running for her life and she falls down the stairs.
Yeah, because there's like scenes after scenes of them trying to go around the house. Like one gets killed in the barn and they leave her. They leave the one girl, so Jan, they just leave her to die instantly. Then Terry and Meg go in back in the house and they have to get, they're told, we have to stab the monster with a sacrificial dagger. And then they're like, no, I have a fire poker. That's all I need.
Well, okay, first of all, can we just talk about how Terry, who has the, like I said, the freaking common sense of an albino raisin, she drops the dagger somewhere. I don't know what the hell she did with it.
They left it in the house.
In her hand the whole time, but
yeah, it
disappears. Then they go back into the house, and she grabs a fire poker, and Meg is like, oh, we need a sacrificial dagger. And she's like, no, we have a fire poker. I'm like, I don't understand. What don't you get? Yeah. You're a fucking twit. Like, you need the dagger to kill this thing.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't get it.
She doesn't get it. She's like, oh, who cares? This is bigger and this is bad.
Oh, my God. She's so stupid. I was like, oh, my gosh. But I know this is bumbling slapstick crap.
Yeah. I mean, it's so cheap. I mean, it's so funny. But they go upstairs to go look for the monster now to see if they can kill it. Well, instead of running out of the house, calling 911, you know, getting out of Dodge.
But, they well, just there's stay no in the phone, house. We know that.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
There's no phone.
Yeah, and then they're afraid to go talk to the neighbor because he showed up and he was also the monster, I guess.
Yeah, it's like...
He had the information.
I thought that the monster can only turn into someone who's dead. So did the monster go over and kill the neighbor?
It doesn't make any sense. And also, the body of the girl was in the barn, but when she showed up again, it wasn't there anymore.
Well, I think that was just a film flub.
It didn't make any sense. I'm like, is it becoming them? Is it not becoming them? It's so weird. And then also, you know, they go upstairs to kill it, and then Terry is instantly killed.
Yep.
And that leaves Meg to go try to run downstairs, but she does what I would call a jump, like a dive down the stairs.
Yeah.
And she falls and hurts her leg.
It was quite funny the way she started crawling away.
Yeah.
Like a victim of Jason Voorhees. It was awesome. Yeah.
They're like, I love that at one point they say to her, hey, read the book and see if you can get the spell. And she goes, my brain hurts. I'm scared.
I'm so scared. My brain won't work.
Oh, it's just so great.
So David Carradine now shows up from where? I don't know.
Yeah, because
he shows up and he's like, the demon's trying to get back into the book. And
oh, so... no. Well, David Carradine just shows up at the door and goes, I've waited all these years to get you. I'm the one that did all of this, and I've been waiting to get revenge on you. Now, first off, the book appeared to him. He is resurrected, and now he brought the book to them. And now all of a sudden he's like, no, I came back to purposely kill the monster. So, and I'm like, wait, what the fuck?
I'm very confused so here.
He pulls out the sacrificial dagger.
He's
like, the monster's like, what are you going to kill me with? And he's like, this. And then they go to get that, like, have a fight. And they start fighting. And he loses very quickly. But luckily, Meg sees the Boone's Farm and has a full bottle of Boone's Farm. But then in the next shot, it's completely empty, and she smashes it over Roxanne the Toon's head, and it allows David Carradine to stab the monster, which now
who's in Roxanne right now.
But then he turns back into the cartoon character and goes, oof, oh, that hurts.
It was so comical.
It hurts so much.
Oh, that hurts.
So he tries to crawl back to the book, and then David Carradine's like, oh my God, if he gets in the book, that's what he wants all along.
Okay, we have to stop
him.
Confused.
And then Meg just goes, well, what if we throw it in the fire? And he goes, I don't know. I guess that could work. And then he actually motions to her, well, go do it. Instead of he can move perfectly. She has a hurt leg.
But I have a question. First of all, David Carradine brings this book to them.
Yes.
Now, he has possession of this book. Why can't he just cast it into the fire?
Well, why couldn't he just...
get rid of the demon.
Yeah, why couldn't he bring the demon to life and then stab it and then burn the book?
But if he burned the book...
why not burn the book altogether?
Yes, he wouldn't have to resurrect the fucking demon.
Yeah.
Why did he go through all of this? He could have just thrown it into the fire.
And then what I love about this is he tells her... Oh, after they killed, because she throws in the fire and he dies, and he actually goes, what a world. I'm melting. And the book goes, and by the way, one of the best special effects in the whole movie is the book melts out of its eyeballs, like it's crying milk or something.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, actually it looks kind of decent.
Yeah.
But they win. Now they sit on the couch, and then David Carradine goes, so I did this. I'm the reason that this all happened.
Yep.
I bought the book and brought it to America, and I read from it because I wanted knowledge, and it released demons, and I couldn't beat it. And so I'm so confused, because wouldn't the demon still be unleashed? How did he get it back into the book before it killed himself in the opening of the movie?
He kills himself in the beginning. So where's the demon at that point?
What, it went back into the book somehow?
So this is what he does. So he figures that the demon is back safely in the book, so now he can go kill himself and everything's gonna be fine.
He thinks that'll stop it, but the book's like, no. And the book does vanish when he hangs himself.
Yeah, but
which doesn't make any sense.
He just pops up out of nowhere and the book materializes in his hand. Now he has possession of this book. Just burn it.
Yeah, just burn it.
Why are you getting these bimbos involved?
Yeah, and then my favorite part is like, yeah, I did all this. And then she goes, well, I wish all my friends didn't die. And then he goes, they're not dead.
Because it was a joke.
The monster never actually existed, and so nothing has happened. And I'm like,
what? Why?
So why even care in the first place?
So why even do any of this? What is the reasoning?
And by burning the book now, wouldn't like anybody else that's ever died just all of a sudden show up?
Oh my God, I was thinking that too. What about the skull?
Yeah. Well, he's just going to be like a head in the box shows up.
Like, oh my God.
It doesn't make any sense. Whose skull was it?
No, we don't know.
Like, I don't even know.
And they made several jokes throughout the movie of there's bodies buried in here or something like that.
No one knows where some of the people have ever disappeared to.
What?
Yeah, and also I love that when the Toon is crawling, like, to get back in the book, he picks up the shroud or whatever, and to put it on him, because it supposedly sends you to hell, and he's like, go to hell, but he never puts it on it. He just vanishes. And I'm like, why is he... You can see him as an actor going, I don't even know what to do with this blanket. Like, what am I supposed to do with this rug? I'm just going to throw it over here. I'm going to bunch it up and throw it on the couch. Well, when he disappears, and she wakes up the next morning, still hurt. Like, she has a gash on her head and everything. They all are back to life.
Yeah, they're fine. Even Dick Miller, everybody's fine. I don't understand the reasoning. Like, the whole entire... I mean, I know the whole movie was just supposed to be a spoofy joke, but the plot is so dumb. Like, why was... Number one, there's no need for David Carradine to be in this movie. But number two, I know that he's got some kind of, like, draw, I guess he did back then. I don't know. I don't know. But
he famously took any movie.
I mean, I think so.
Any movie.
I think so, because he needed the paycheck. But damn, there's no way he got paid a lot doing this. But I love the gratuitous nudity and the ridiculousness and the silly, like, slapstick stuff. But I think that the thing that bothered me the most about this movie was the goddamn line delivery coming out of...
Oh, it's insane.
Coming out of Terry.
And I will say that it's pretty damn human. We didn't even talk about when the girl's stripping. Every time she removes a piece of clothes, it makes sound effects. It's like...
I mean, yeah, it was like ridiculous. Like, it sounded like she was tearing off a fruit roll-up.
Yeah. It's like... Yeah. And then also, at one point, they're so scared that Meg's hair... Her braid stands all the way up.
Yes. Oh, my God. It was very... Okay, we know what we were watching. It was a ridiculous movie. It was ridiculous.
At one point, though, it stopped being funny.
It did.
It, like, the whole... I would say the first 30 minutes are really, really funny.
Yeah, but then you know what? Like, I think we... As we started thinking too much about it, I'm like... And then I started checking myself, because I'm like, what are you even thinking about? What are you thinking about, you idiot? There's nothing to think about here.
I guess that, I mean, I guess that's the thing with all movies. It's like, what are we supposed to take with a grain of salt or not? It is extremely poor in that last half. Like,
oh yeah,
it's so odd trying to get done with it, but it's still, I don't know what it is. For me, this is the kind of movie that I think is so bad it's good.
I mean, okay. In summation, David, the whole plot of this movie is David Carradine needs to give them the book to release the demon so that he can come and kill the demon.
Yes.
That's
okay. He wanted the girls to release it so he can come and kill it, except he waits until all of them are almost dead to get revenge.
Okay, and I have another question. Why did he wait like a century? Okay, because has anyone else lived in that house that could have possibly helped him do this?
Like, yeah, I don't understand
it either. Why now, with these bimbos, you know, cleaning the house, does he come back centuries later say, hey,
and it's another one of those things where the ghosts, why do ghosts always fuck around? Why don't they just tell people? Like, you know, I hate this. Like, every time there's a ghost in a movie, they just don't say what they need to say. Like, go to the neighbor or Dick Miller and say, hey, I'm a ghost, read this page, and when the thing comes out, I'm going to stab it, and then throw it in the fire.
Yeah, yeah. So, on first viewing of this movie, I gave it a 2.
Oof.
I did, but I'm changing my mind.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a 4.
Holy shit.
It's so bad, it's good. Like, it's reached that level where, like, okay, you know what you're watching. This is not good cinema at all. Like, this is trash. It's just utter trash.
I always say that so bad is good is 4 stars.
That's what I'm saying.
Because it rises up from how silly it is and all that. This movie, it's so fucking stupid in such a fun way that you got to admit it's funny.
I mean, I really hated Terry, okay? I thought she was the worst.
She's the worst part.
The worst. But just the over-the-top, gratuitous nudity and the gratuitous, like, silliness of it, I have to give it a 4. I'm definitely changing my mind on it.
All right. That's a huge jump from 2 to 4.
Yeah, right? It is. And I feel good about that.
I think it's definitely worth watching. It is a really funny one.
It's funny. It's like, it knows what it is.
I'm giving it a 4 as well, by the way.
Yeah, I figured you had already given it the first time.
I did. It's already a 4.
Yeah, that's why I didn't even ask, because I'm like, I know you gave it a 4.
And I'm rewatching it, I was laughing out loud a lot in the first half.
Yeah, you were.
There was a bunch where I'd die laughing.
It gave you that half stewy look.
Her trying to open the bottle was genius. It was gold for me.
Yeah, most of the good scenes happened with that actress.
Yeah, pretty much, actually.
Yeah. All right, so now that we gave our reviews, I'm going to do our segment of Why We Can't Have Nice Things, where I give you 2 extremes of online reviews, basically why... the internet kind of fucks up the whole movie rating system. So this is I'm going to give you the 10. The title of this review is An Honest Review. What? Why is the rating so low here? It wasn't like this movie even tried to be good. It wasn't like it even tried to tell you it was good. This was a bad movie made to be a bad movie, made to entertain you on the basis of it being a bad movie. It achieved that goal. You can't give the movie 3 stars for achieving the goal it set out to. And to ensure it is both bad and entertaining, a cartoon rapes someone. That's right. You have a cartoon raping a human. It's kind of like someone watching Who Framed Roger Rabbit and then said, hey, we can do that so much worse. You think that's good? We can make a movie like it that's so bad you'll love it. And that is exactly what they did. It's a twisted B-rated version of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Only the cartoon is evil, and that makes it not better, but in a category all to its own. It's not trying to scare you, and even the jokes aren't trying to make you laugh. It's trying to be a bad movie that entertains you by hitting all the cliches of the bad movie genre. So 10 out of 10 stars, it set a goal for itself, and it achieved it.
Wow, there's a lot of layers on that one.
Okay, well, all right. Well, this person is saying that it knows that it's not a good movie. Like, he knows it's not a good movie, or they know it's not a good movie. Okay.
So he's judging. I mean, that idea of judging a movie because it's setting out to do a certain thing, they wanted it to be better than this. So yes. That's kind of bull crap.
But then also saying that it's like someone watched Who Framed Roger Rabbit and it's kind of like that. No, it's not at all like Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Just because there's a cartoon in a human.
One cartoon in a human world. They did that in Cool World as well.
Yeah.
With the cartoons in human.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about that. I wanted to say, I feel like a month we should just watch all the animated and human pairings.
Oh,
like
yeah.
An animated thing killing or hurting a person or being in a world with live action people. We should watch some of those movies because there's a bunch of weird ones like that, like Cool World. Like,
yeah. First of all, you can't say that this is a bad movie and then give it a 10. You have to be realistic. Well,
that's the problem.
So that's what's wrong with that. And then this is the 1 out of 10. It's lame, unfunny, dull, and boring. Evil Tunes is a lame, unfunny, dull, and boring exploitation with porn starlets.
Yeah.
I can't even get my words out anymore. The plot is ridiculous in the storyline. 4 sexy young girls are to clean an old house for the new owners is awful, since the women are not sexy young girls and the house is not old. Surprisingly, David Carradine participates in this garbage. The worst is that I saw this movie many years ago but did not recall how bad it is, and I have just seen it again. My vote is 1. Awful.
Okay. I mean, I think that him and that other person should talk.
For real. Have a conversation. You'll both land on a 3.
Yeah, maybe you'll get in the middle ground there.
Yeah.
All right, so we're seeing this isn't the worst movie ever made.
No.
But what is? Now, my question is, on our list we've been making, is this worse or better than Madam Web?
Oh, this is worse than Madam Web.
This is worse than Madam Web.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so is this worse or better than... Oh, I'll skip all the way up to Invasion USA.
I had more fun with this one, so I'm going to say it's better than Invasion USA. That was crap.
All right. Artemis Fowl?
Well, Artemis Fowl was a more competent film. Artemis Fowl was better, yeah.
Okay.
Even though this is a colossal piece of crap, it was very entertaining.
All right, I'm going to put it at number 20.
Okay.
All right. I don't know. I don't know. I definitely think this is a suggest. I think it's crazy enough that everybody should check it out at least once.
I mean, I think you need to. It's yeah. Like, because you won't believe what you're seeing on the screen. It's like so goofy. And I know it's not taking itself seriously at all. So just go in knowing that you're going to be watching like, oh my God. You're going to say, oh my God, a lot. Because I did. And I was just like, holy crap. Like, oh my gosh, come on, come on, come on. But it has, you know, gratuitous TNA. It's got silly, goofy, terrible CG.
Yeah. Oh, it's not even CG. They had to draw it in, which is very hard. They had to do cell shading onto the thing. That's why it costs so much. And it can only afford a little bit of it. That's why it's only 90 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, he looks goofy. But then you got terrible, terrible acting. I mean, just dreadful. Yeah. Like, the worst.
Still, that's a part of why it's quaint.
Yeah. So, that's it. That's what we got for you. This movie's, it's something to see. I'll tell you. And if you don't see
thanks it, thanks for rewatching it with me on the show. Of course.
See it for the nudity, because there's some nice boobs.
I mean, yeah, it's so funny that the one girl that shows her boobs off like that never gets naked. There's never the, you would expect that sex scene where a guy comes over and she does. You know, they set all that up, that she's a virgin, she wants to know about sex stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't play in. Doesn't mean anything.
No. Nope.
Yeah, that's a lot of the movie. It doesn't mean anything. Doesn't come back.
Yep, yep.
All right, though. Thanks for listening, everybody. We are, of course, on Instagram at Just Another Movie Night and The Crafty Misfit. Check us out. Hit us up if you hate this movie, if you love this movie. Love to hear about it. As always, thank you for listening and have a good one. Bye.
Well, that was fun. Any dirty pictures in here?
Tons, but I'm turning in, not turning on.
Yeah, me too. And if you guys had any sense, you would too.
I'm ready.
Just about completes our tour of Dr. Satan's neighborhood. Tune in next week when we hear Roxanne say,
"Let's get the hell out of here."